Chapter 13. Void War. I've spoken of our fleet's might, but not its poverty. The many demon forges that would later answer Abaddon's calls were still in their infancy within the Empire of the Eye. Our heresy-era technology was eternally degrading, even back then, and we had little to use in place of our losses. Resources like ore-rich moons, shipboard foundries, and mechanicum manufactoria were as precious to us as fresh water. Not only agonizingly rare, but also subject to their own sufferings. Legion warbands endlessly plundered such sites in the rabid hunt for shreds and scraps of advantage. You have heard evidence of this carrion feeding already. I have told you of Malium, of the raids and punishments it endured, and of our undignified picking through its carcass. We were all vultures and carrion crows in those days. I believe we still are. And if we were low on ammunition, if our armour plating was cracked, repaired, and cracked again, the truth is that our fleets were in even worse shape. We had been beaten in the heresy. We had been beaten into exile in the Scouring. And while the Imperium licked its wounds in the aftermath of our disappearance, we had spent that era waging war against one another. For every vessel enhanced by mutation, another was cursed by it. For every cruiser sailing with admirable repairs or an undamaged hull, another was a shell of its former glory. Within eye space, our ships were subject to the erosion of the warp's touch, accelerating natural degradation, and reliable opportunities to dry dock and repair a capital ship were staggeringly scarce. In the eye, especially in that era, a functioning stable shipyard was practically the stuff of dreams. They were always the highest priority for destruction if another warband wished to grind a rival into dust. For a time, the newborn Black Legion had claimed and defended Niobia Halo, the shipyard and forge moon belonging to Syraxia and Valakar. That custodianship had ended when Tagus Daravek led a war host of word-bearers and Death Guard to annihilate our docks and plunder the riches we had acquired. The installation was lost in the resulting battle. Afterwards, both Valakar and Syraxia joined the Ezekarian as fleetmaster and armsmistress, respectively. Many of the vessels we sailed from the Eye into the waiting fire arcs of the Black Templar's fleet bore the wounds of ages. The pressures of the storm that had barred our escape only added to the strains already placed on their hulls after centuries of civil war and sailing in the unquiet, poisoned tides of eye space. Imperial captains across the millennia often observe that the traitor legions and our thrall fleets are comprised of warships plundered from sectors surrounding the Eye. The Gothic sector alone has supplied us with any number of ships across the many centuries. This is a sad necessity, as our crusade and heresy-era vessels break down beyond sustainability, are lost to the warp's clutches, or are simply destroyed in the ebb and flow of the Long War. It's for these same reasons that you see our individual warriors equipped with ancient and unreliable patterns of weaponry, or reduced to using inefficient, outdated war gear. For all the strength that mutation and hatred bestow, erosion, decay, and the eternal civil war between the nine legions takes more than its share. We are mighty, but it's a tenuous might. Just as that day, when we outnumbered Sigismund's armada, our advantage was fragile. We did not have the luxury of carelessness. A great deal of our fleet's strength was concentrated in the killing power and endurance of the Vengeful Spirit and the other largest ships that once sailed at the vanguard of the Great Crusade. Most were changed significantly by their time in the Eye, and I knew their machine spirit cores would be as disorientated by their return to real space as any truly living being. I have no gift for Void War. I've never been able to overcome the helplessness of being a witness to such grand destruction, with my fate entirely cradled by the vessel around me. Worst of all, Void Battle is not swift. Despite the fact thousands of men and women are dying with every passing second, the war itself plays out with unbearable traction. I remained on the command deck as the battle began. The Eternal Crusader and the Vengeful Spirit powered towards one another, but they were not the first vessels to engage. That honor fell to the Tiresian's Hex, a light cruiser that sped ahead of its engagement sphere, immediately finding itself pockmarked with gas-venting wounds as an Imperial fighter wing clung to its skin like a haze of circling insects. More of our vessels tore free of their formations, streaking ahead at the whims of bloodthirsty captains who were spurred on by the long-denied taste of vengeance. I shook my head at the sight, only for Leorvine to snort at my disappointment. He was at my side upon the throne's elevated dais, watching the same images on the Oculus. He sympathized with the warships falling out of formation to risk their own revenge. "Undisciplined," I said.
"Well, not everyone is a cold-blooded Tisken," he grunted back.
His cranial implants were biting. One of his eyes kept twitching closed, and he had to suck saliva back through his metal teeth. "We are soldiers," I pointed out.
"Soldiers?"
He made an insult of the word.
"Once we were crusaders, Kaon, and now we are warriors, but we were never soldiers. Keep that foolishness to yourself."
I swallowed my argument, following his train of thought. It was not the first time legionaries have disagreed over those semantics, and it would be far from the last. Some believed soldiering came down to discipline, or fighting for a state or a leader rather than for yourself. Some believed warriorhood was a matter of heart that elevated them above a soldier's station, while others considered it a state of barbarity that dragged them beneath it. Some questions have no answers. No matter how seriously we took warfare, no matter how adamantly we clung to our disciplined roots as a Space Marine Legion, many of our number were ultimately the raiders and marauders that time had made them. For better or worse, we would never have the ironclad discipline of a throne-loyal Adeptus Astartes force. Even back then, we had lost much of the discipline we had once possessed as legions of the Great Crusade.
"No argument," Lahiel grinned. "Where is Kaon, and what have you done with him?"
"I'm in no mood for your jests."
"Were you ever?"
"Please, be quiet, Lahiel." The ship shivered as the first lance strikes came close enough to caress it, and our void shields lit in reaction, brought into shimmering being. In her containment chamber tank, Ultio pushed her hands forwards through the fluid. Her face was set in savage concentration, as was mine. Ultio lived the battle as it unfolded, but I was limited to merely watching it, trying to follow its course through the inefficient vista of flickering hololithics and an Oculus plagued by static. The Eternal Crusader powered ever closer. The Vengeful Spirit felt tight around me, its every deckplate and hull wall taut with Ultio's excited fury. She wanted nothing more than to claw her sister ship to pieces with lance and broadside. From the viciousness writ upon her face, I thought she might even be tempted to ram the other vessel in her rage. The ship gave a tremendous shudder beneath another barrage. The lights sputtered across the chamber. "That was no lance strike," I said.
"Well, look."
Nahir drew my attention back to the Oculus.
"Well, that's not good."
Three vessels sailed in an elevated engagement sphere at a standoff distance, too far from the wrath of our guns unless we broke off from the Eternal Crusader. Their delineation runes marked them as vessels unfamiliar to the Vengeful Spirit's memory banks, Crusade-era Victory-class cruisers belonging to no legion. I watched as the rearmost of the three daggerish vessels, thick with the flies of its lesser escorts, trembled in the void as it fired a city's worth of shipwide stabilizers. The impact struck us even before the ship's prow-mounted accelerator coils had flashed with their release. The Vengeful Spirit heaved around us, metal groaning under tension, bruises discoloring Ultio's dusky skin. She gave a snarl that had no place emerging from a human throat. Lahiel grunted as the ship stabilized.
"Shield breakers," he said.
"Sailing with minimal escorts," I replied. "That's bait if ever I saw it."
"Sure enough, but it's one hell of an opportunity."
He wiped his mouth on the back of his hand.
"What's more important here, killing Sigismund or claiming resources for the Long War?"
He had a point, and I was of a mind to encourage his rare tactfulness. I opened a voxlink to Abaddon, where he waited in his boarding claw. Ezekiel?
We felt it,
his voice crackled back, marred by interference. Nova
Cannon!
He paused, doubtless reviewing the data from within his helm's tactical feeds, calculating how much damage they could inflict upon us before we reached the Eternal Crusader. If the imagery suffered battle interference up here on the bridge, it was likely little more than a spread of distortion across a helmet's retinal feed.
Proceed as planned,
Abaddon decided, as we'd all known he would.
Our escorts will catch up after we engage. We'll hold a quarter of their fleet alone if we have to.
We can chase the cruisers down, I argued. We can silence those long guns for good. There was logic to this. Nova cannons require an immense sacrifice in time and effort to prepare, fire, and reload, and were near worthless at close range. With Abaddon's order, we could tear through those three victory cruisers like a mythical Terran lion ravaging through a helpless herd of extinct Terran elk.
Should we not board them and claim them for ourselves? Think of the value of such prizes. Don't be tempted by lesser prey, sorcerer. It's a juicy ruse to lure the alpha predator away. They know if we go for their throat, we win almost at once. So they offer up tempting targets to test our resolve.
The vengeful spirit is our greatest game piece on this board, I replied to Abaddon. Let us win the war first. Then you can face Sigismund.
I will have his head,
Abaddon snapped. His famous temper kindled at the threat of being denied close quarters slaughter. I could practically sense him trying to wrest it back under control.
Whatever they attempt is meaningless once we're aboard the Crusader, and nothing they can do will stop us boarding it. Ignore the ripe targets they lay in our path. Proceed as planned.
I tried one final time. We are here to raid, Ezekiel. We are here to gather our strength, not deplete it. We should take those ships for ourselves. Abaddon's reply was a static-laden dismissal.
Valakar is fleet master. Let him take them, or kill them as he sees fit. I want Sigismund, Kaon. I feel the hand of fate on my shoulder. This must be done.
There would be no arguing with him. Every syllable that left his fanged mouth seethed with vindicta. Our greatest strength and our deepest flaw, embodied by Ezekiel, who has always been the best of us. I wondered how much of his eagerness was a desire for vengeance and glory, and how much was desperation to prove himself against the Legiones Astartes hero that had taken his place as first favoured. Any warrior of the Nine Legions that says he fights without bitterness is lying. There was more, and it was not tied into our gene-forged bodies or the preternatural depths of our bitterness. Abaddon was driven by a hunger far more mundane. Warriors throughout history have always defined themselves by having the courage to face their enemies, and by the quality of the foes that fall before them. Of course Abaddon wanted Sigismund dead. I spared a look at Morriana, who stood by Abaddon's empty throne. She could not overhear my conversation, for she lacked access to the vox, but she still smiled when she saw me take note of her. I said nothing to Ezekiel. There was nothing to say. The link went dead, immediately punctuated by the rattling shake of the ship around us once more. Nova cannon projectiles, hurled by circular racks of gravitic impellers and accelerator spirals, detonated in plasmic cloudbursts the size of celestial bodies. The vengeful spirit tore through the detonation's savage aftermath, increasingly alone as our escorts fell ever further behind. Initially, we had been at risk of outpacing them with Ultio's aggressive charge, but now they were truly forced back. We could survive a sustained Nova cannon barrage. They could not. We are about to be dangerously alone, I said to no one but myself. Morriana's smile was an unreadable crescent. It could have been sincere or vicious. I could not tell.
Have faith, Iskander, she said. Trust in Ezekiel. Destiny rides at his side this day, and the gods are bearing witness to his deeds. These are his first steps to becoming the vessel into which the Pantheon pours all of its promises.
I sneered at the sentiment.
I trust Ezekiel completely, prophetess. It is your gods that I mistrust and despise.
My lady, if you believe Abaddon will ever become their vessel, you have gravely misjudged the man you admire.
Time changes all things, Iskander. Ezekiel is a soul of singular vision.
Your serene smugness makes my gorge rise, I told her with exaggerated politeness. And I am telling you, Mariana, you did not see the expression he wore when he rammed the talon through his reborn father's body. Abaddon is everything Horus is not. Your gods may plague us. Some of us may even pray to them in times of dire need, but the son will never fall into the duped slavery that held his father in thrall. The sooner you see that, the sooner you will see why we follow him. She laughed aloud as the deck shivered around us.
How confidently you speak of the future. Are you a seer now?
I'm a man who knows his brother. She paled at the force of my tone, perhaps suspecting she had pushed me too far. Nefertari and Nagual drew near, the huntress playfully regarding her crystal claws, the great cat giving a low, burbling growl. I had not summoned them, yet they had read my mood perfectly. "Remove this civilian from the bridge," I ordered them. For the very first time, Mariana looked hesitant as the demon cat and the winged alien regarded her with cold gazes.
"I am Ezekarian," she said,
and I could not help but laugh.
"Well, that means Ezekiel is sworn to heed your counsel," I replied. "And it means I will not kill you, Mariana. It does not mean I want you on the command deck in the midst of a battle."
"I'm staying here, Kaon. Your slaves won't harm me."
"I say again, I am pledged not to kill you."
"I said nothing about not harming you. If I crushed your spine and plucked your eyes from your face, you could still mule your prophecies to Abaddon." She swallowed, believing me, and finally falling silent. "Nagual, Nefertari, take her away. Guard her somewhere that any boarding parties will not be able to reach."
Nefertari narrowed her slanted alien eyes. "It is time to leave, Mongay God Whisperer."
Nagual reinforced her words with a snarl. Mariana backed away, dignified in defeat, though I could hear the rhythm of her quickened heartbeat as she retreated. When the three of them had left the bridge, Luhio approached me once more. I had the sudden and disquieting notion that he had retreated from Mariana's presence, hiding from her.
"She makes my teeth itch," Luhio said quietly.
His eyes were glassy and unfocused.
"I can't decide why."
"I know why," I ventured.
"You do?"
Some of the caution bled from his gaze, now she was gone. "It is because she speaks like a Primarch. Everything she says is wreathed in certainty and inevitability, and dripping with righteous invincibility. The same deluded cries of our failed fathers. My patience for that kind of preaching ran out around the time we were fleeing from terror with our tails between our legs." Lahior showed his metal teeth in a grin. Some were bronze in colour, some a dull silver. He replaced them periodically. I'd never thought to ask what they were really made from.
"She does talk like a Primarch," he agreed. "Though she drools less than Angron ever did. I'll give her that."
Ultio thrashed in her suspension tank, her mouth silently wide, lips peeled back from her teeth. The choir of vox gargoyles and drifting servo skulls gave voice to her scream, loud enough to set the beastmen braying in worship. In response to her feral shriek, the vengeful spirit heaved into a heavy roll, ramming its way through an ocean of streaming torpedoes. They were pinpricks against the anamnesis's skin, the buzzing of worthless vermin.
"Blood,"
she mouthed. "And blood," her gargoyles hissed above us.
"Blood crystals in the bare void, and twisted iron turned to melted slag, and bursting bodies and decompression gasps, and charred steel and rancid chemical fire, and—"
On and on she spat the hissing curses, caught in a trance, staring at the Eternal Crusader. The beastmen shouted prayers and devotional braying to their entombed goddess, the heart and soul of the ship, loud enough to set the air shivering. On the Oculus, the black lance of our sister ship speared ever closer. It's difficult to describe the vengeful spirit in battle without straying into theatricality, because a simple retelling of its deeds defies both reason and physics. You must bear witness to it fighting in order to believe what she is capable of. Even before the Anamnesis was installed as the flagship's machine spirit, reports from the Horus Heresy listed the vessel as performing maneuvers of impossible agility and unleashing weapons of unknown, unnatural origin. And these reports, while true, were just the beginning. The Eye changed the vengeful spirit in ways that went beyond the crenellations and bastions along its back and the dark goddess at its heart. Existence inside the Eye had bred insanity and lethality into its iron bones. We tore past the Eternal Crusader that night, close enough that our void shield shrieked with contact discharge against theirs. Voices immediately overlapped as they shouted status updates. Shield strength reports were bellowed across the chamber. Three of the Beastmen crew roared that the boarding pods had been fired from their housings. A fighter escort wing had already spat free from their launch bays, tasked with shooting down any missiles tracking our boarding claws. The pilots' chatter spilled across the vox as they flew and fought and died. Weapon masters and gunnery overseers bawled orders into their consoles as the oculus filled with the Eternal Crusaders' shield-lit spinal castles. Voices, 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 sirens, fire, thunder, shrieks, detonations. Death. It sounded like Prospero. It sounded like Prospero burning under the Wolf King's rage. And then we were past them. We dived through a loose phalanx of the Eternal Crusaders' escorts, our guns silent, every cannon and turret across the ship holding its breath. Projectiles still rained and burst against our shields, but we lanced onwards without firing back. Ultio was the reason why. She silenced the thousands of cannons slave to her will, and her worshipful crew obeyed. She rolled in her suspension tank, arcing her back, every muscle in her body taut, sinews standing out on her flesh with almost emaciated ferocity. Her jaw was clenched hard enough to risk shattering her teeth. Her eyes, the same dark shade as my own, were rolled to show bare whites. The ship heaved around us, gravity generators straining to keep pace with the speed of our turn. Weighted air slammed many of us from our feet. I remained standing by locking my boots to the deck. On the Oculus, the Eternal Crusader was beginning to lean into a hard turn, one that would still take a minute or more to complete. The vengeful spirit, without slowing an iota, pulled up, inverting its pitch at full speed, rolling to face the way it had come. At the moment we aligned with the Eternal Crusader dead ahead, the engines roared even hotter. Physics disallows such a manoeuvre at such speed, but it took place in the span of my twin hearts beating no more than 10 times. The Eternal Crusader was still in the first motions of its turn. The Anamnesis raked at its image with her clawed hands, and lance fire streamed silver-white from the vengeful spirit's prow. Torpedoes flew behind those glittering beams. A city killing's worth of incendiary rage caught the Eternal Crusader unprepared, spreading migraine prism light across its suffering void shields, then bursting them to rain fire upon its unprotected hull. "The Crusader's shields are down, and Lord Abaddon is aboard her," Ultio voxed to the fleet. "Cripple her, but remember, she is mine to kill once this is over." The Anamnesis leaned the vengeful spirit into a more conventional role, coming about to face the closest Black Templar ships. There was a deathly light in her eyes. She wore the expression of a child learning it can inflict pain on helpless insects, burning them with sunlight through a focusing lens and pulling off their legs and wings. And that is when the true fight began. The Eagle of Old Earth was a destroyer, aligning itself into an attack run before we had fully come about. Its weapon batteries banged into the void, spreading impacts across our shields. And there it should have ceased, using its speed and maneuverability to escape. Instead, it lingered for a second volley, its captain likely buying time for the Eternal Crusader to finish its own course changes. But Ultio was done with her sister ship. That was Abaddon's prey now. The Anamnesis had a fleet to kill. The eagle of old Earth shields lasted all of 7 seconds beneath our broadsides as we cut past. The cityscape of Hecutor, macro cannons along her port side, screamed their sunfire against the eagle of old Earth's naked hull, annihilating the smaller ship in a supernova of bursting plasma. Altio did not even react. She was already focused on the vessels ahead, above, below. The Black Templars had our flagship isolated and were closing in for the kill. The ship shook endlessly around us, gravity fading or pressing down upon us with punishing force as a consequence of Altio's movements. Lahior, his features twitching with the bite of his cranial implants, worked from a handheld hololith projector, studying a flickering layout of the flagship. Red runic markers denoted the estimated position of Black Templar's boarding teams. I tuned out his words as he conveyed information and orders across the vox, keeping Delvaris and his Riven squad leaders appraised of the intruders' locations.
"Fewer than I'd have expected," he said to me.
We both knew why. The bulk of their strength was still aboard the Eternal Crusader, luring Abaddon and our inner circle into their territory.
"More than enough to keep Delvaris entertained,"
I replied with a calm that I did not entirely feel. "And to slaughter several hundred mortal crew," I thought, though I kept the words from Lihior's mind, not wishing to inflame the pain engine in his brain and distract him from his task. He spoke into the squad relay vox for another few seconds, then regarded me with twitching eyes.
"This is woeful and bloodless, brother. We should be down there fighting with Delvaris."
"Or aboard the Crusader."
"Or there,"
he agreed. I tuned into Delvaris's vox feeds, only to be met with raucous screaming, howling, jagged laughter and leonine roars. Bolters crashed in the background. Wherever Delvaris was, he was reaping his share of lives. The Riven was Delvaris's warband, a host of secondborn I had helped create over time, binding demons within mortally wounded warriors, and whenever the chance arose, prisoners we took in battle. In later years, Imperial forces have encountered Black Legion squads wearing the demonically tainted armor of Loyalist chapters, as I and my apprentices have bound Neverborn into our captives. Before my journey to Terra and my surrender to the Inquisition's care, I kept a coterie of such bodyguards myself. Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Imperial Fists, and several of their successors, their souls shattered and subsumed by the presence of the demons riding their husks. It makes for a delicious insult on the battlefield. In those early days, however, Delvaris's warband were largely comprised of sacrificial volunteers from the Sons of Horus and the World Eaters, as well as prisoners from the other legions.
"Oh, the Riven are enjoying themselves,"
Lahior muttered. He was rocking slightly now, unable to keep still, suffering from an erratic adrenal energy he could do nothing to discharge. I would have told him to join the fighting, but he would have refused me. He was a war leader, an officer, and a lord in the Legion, and his place was coordinating his brethren. He would do his duty, no matter how much he craved to shed blood in its place. Altio sailed us through an ocean of enemy firing solutions, treating the ship around her like a steed to be reined to her will and coaxed to give her ever more speed. She acknowledged every one of our foes in a descending list of priorities, one that shifted moment by moment based on threat calculations of armament, support, and positioning. Her attention was absolute. She chased her prey, one after the other, with meticulous precision, inflicting enough damage to sunder shields and cripple or kill before immediately refocusing on another target. The heavy cruiser Adamantine sought to bar our path and block us within a crossfire of several vessels. The vengeful spirit banked into a roll like a bullet leaving a rifle, our port and starboard broadsides fireworking into the conflicted night, discharging at the vessels around us as we twisted and dived towards the Adamantine. Our prow batteries were lances and graviton pulsar arrays. The former ruptured the Adamantine shields in a disintegration of shredding light, before the latter crushed the warship's forward decks in a mangling compression of molecules. Its bridge was among those decks that collapsed beneath this manipulation of its mass, and Altio torpedoed the still sailing wreckage to send it spinning aside. It was not quite enough. Altio finished the execution up close, The vengeful spirit rammed the headless cruiser aside, savaging it with a second graviton volley that collapsed another immense section of its superstructure. Within a heartbeat, she was rolling us again, chasing another foe. I could take it no more, this realm of thunder and shaking walls. I closed my eyes and reached out, seeking a battle I could contribute to. I found Amuriel almost at once. I rode within my brother's mind as his assault team made its way through the Eternal Crusader. I could not be with them in the flesh, so I journeyed with them in spirit. As I sank into Amuriel's senses, an unwelcome familiarity gripped me. I'd been aboard the Eternal Crusader twice before, both times as an ambassador to the Imperial Fists in shared theatres of war. How strange it felt to enter those halls not with curiosity and respect, making overtures to another legion in the Great Crusade, but with blades in our hands and hate in our hearts. I clung to Muriel's thoughts. He felt me there and did not resist, though I would not exactly call it a welcome either. Through his senses I experienced the battle. The air clattered with the metallic coughing of bolt guns and the shrieking beams of the few Volkite weapons we possessed that still functioned. Each breath I drew was spiced with the physoline stink of shell propellant or the scorched ozone of steaming metal. Amuriel's warriors comprised a ravening horde. Squad by squad, they massacred their way through the Eternal Crusader, butchering even unarmed mortal crew, wasting precious ammunition as if we possessed an abundance of such riches. All caution was cast aside. Our men could not be reined in now, even if we had wanted to do so. The Black Templars met rage with wrath, charging down corridors to crash against the advancing disorderly tides that had invaded their domain. Again and again we were locked against shield walls of ceramite plate, where vision thinned to the motions of flashing blades and rattling chains. We bled. We sheeted with sweat. We swore. Fists and pistol grips pounded against helmets. Chain blades carved their whining way through armor joints or sprayed useless sparks against reinforced plate. Amuriel needed room to swing his sword. In close quarters, a warrior needs a shorter thrusting blade, not a duelist's longsword. And many were the times Amuriel's blade was fouled by a poor angle or snarled in a Templar's body, struggling to withdraw after a killing blow. The warriors we faced ground against us in an unceasing horde, sounding out battle cries and oaths to the Emperor, roaring into our faces. Those behind us, our own brothers, howled in frustration, unable to reach through the tight ranks to kill the foes they had waited centuries to face again. Blood misted the air. Tabards and robes ignited under flamer gouts and spraying sparks. Every heartbeat was punctuated by another crumpling crack of a bolt shell detonating inside a body. We killed blindly in that press of arcing weapons and flashing limbs. The tide would turn in one tunnel, only for another squad of Black Knights to meet us at the next junction or around the next corner. I remained peripherally aware of the vengeful spirit around me, shivering and shaking as the other battle raged. I could make out Lihior's murmurs as he relayed orders to the Riven and his own squads from the War God's Moor. Riding Amuriel's mind was exchanging one sense of helplessness for another, but at least aboard the Eternal Crusader I was with my brethren and could be of some use to them. Amuriel called his racing, bleeding squad to halt. Several of them actually obeyed. "What is it?" I sent to him, speaking within the mist of his senses. His thoughts were a furious stream of consciousness in the near darkness of the Eternal Crusader's repetitive corridors.
"Scanner, need my Auspex. The fighting is unreal. Gods, these bastards can fight. We're falling behind Abaddon."
"You are not behind. You are ahead of almost every other assault force. Only Telemachon and the Shrieking Masquerade are ahead of you."
"How do you know?"
he asked.
"Where is Abaddon?"
"He's embattled in the secondary starboard colonnades," I replied. "His boarding pods took suppressive fire on approach, so he's fighting undermanned. And I know because I know where all of you are. I can hear the songs of your thoughts even over this distance."
"Where is Telemachon? I have to link up with him, and he's refusing to answer the vox."
I resisted the urge to laugh, which was no easy feat. "Telemachon seeks the glory of slaying Sigismund alone. He will not come back for you, Amuriel. He is thinking of nothing but casting the Black Knight's severed head at Abaddon's feet as a gift for our lord. Move west and regroup with any of your sergeants still able to follow orders. There is a concourse not far from here that leads to the spinal tributaries. Amuriel spat acid onto the deck.
Thank you, brother. You should be here, Kaon. I could use you at my side.
I wanted nothing more than to be there, instead of bloodlessly watching from afar as our legion won its first victory against the Imperium. Abaddon cannot trust me. Not after Daravek.
Perhaps,
he agreed, too easily for my tastes. Amuriel moved again. I slipped free of his thoughts and opened my eyes. Altio was screaming. It took me a moment to realize it was a cry not of rage, but of pain. Blood streamed through the fluid of her suspension tank. The cables that crowned her, binding her skull to the logic engines at the top of her life tomb, were tangled and leaking coppery oil. Psi stigmata showed in an ugly patchwork across her skin, some of it taking the form of cuts and rents, others showing as bruises. As weariness descended upon her, or as pain crept across her thoughts, her control over the vessel slipped. This was nothing I had not seen many times before. The anamnesis forced to speak orders to the command deck crew, instead of relying entirely on her control as the ship's machine spirit. She was doing so now, maintaining a barrage of clear, concise orders.
80 degrees portside yaw, accelerating at once. Fighters and bombers to flock to the Falcata as we come about. Formulate attack runs against its defensive broadsides. Shields failing in 30 to 10 seconds. Begin the siphon of plasmic conduction to relight the shields. Starboard four gunner decks. Be ready to fire in 12 seconds. Target the Ophidian Gulf as it passes through our firing solution. Shatter its shields and vox the ecstasy of fire with orders to chase it down. Prepare the Ultima torpedo array for vortex lock upon the Prideclad when we shift to the fourth subquadrant. Shields failing in 25 to 5 seconds. Brace for inevitable bombardment as the shields fall. There. The Arcus and the Sword of Sigismund are bringing lances to bear. Brace for impact. Brace. Brace. When the shields fell, they fell with a seismic sound wave that jarred the vengeful spirit to its industrial bones. The shuddering intensified as weapons struck the naked hull with impunity. Yet Altio, bleeding and bruised, was immersed in the killing fields before her. The ship banked and rolled with her will, or moved at her command when her will was no longer sufficient. Impacts rained against us. Our weapons spat back. Beastmen roared around me. Lahior abandoned his console and shouted for his arming slaves. Saliva had formed a sheen on his chin, and by the light of his bloodshot eyes, it would not be long before he lost himself to the nails. Borders from the blade of the seventh sun. They've gained the Primus tributaries.
That was dangerously close to the bridge, and though the Riven was scattered across the ship, it was the war god's maw that held the sectors around the command deck. Lahior was going to join his warriors. Three heavily augmented beastmen from Lahior's ruddy-furred Korngor clans brought his heavy bolter and ammunition feeds. Another carried his chain axe, and yet another bore his helmet. Lahior tore the weapons from their clawed hands and leaned forwards for the last of the beastmen to affix his crested helm in place. "May the god of war be with you," I said, not without an edge of sarcasm. His eye lenses glowed as his helmet seals locked, and he hefted the brutal cannon he favoured no matter the battlefield.
"What did you just say?"
"Nothing," I smiled. "Good hunting, brother."
"Don't lose the battle when I'm gone,"
he said, as if I had anything to do with Altio's talents in the art of war. I could give her orders, but she needed none. This was her arena, not mine. Lahior summoned the handful of his warriors present on the bridge and led them into the corridors that formed the vengeful spirit's veins. I briefly listened to the clicking vox chatter as he rallied several of his squads on the way. It synergized, in a way, with Altio's stream of orders and the shivering thunder impacting upon the hull. A perfect storm of sound. I turned back to the Oculus as the cruiser Arcus, once of the Imperial Fists warfleet and now of the Black Templars Armada, detonated in our wake. At the heart of the braying beastman herds and a world of dark steel shaking around me, I seated myself on Abaddon's throne, eyes half-lidded with the onset of a meditative trance as I watched the Black Legion's fate playing out before me. Time passed. Lives ended. Warships died. I watched fire tear through pressurized sanctuaries and cease to exist once it kissed the void. I watched the blazes slough the flesh from bones before breaking those bones down to ash. I watched torpedoes streak and swerve and drill and detonate. I watched lance beams carve through consecrated armor that had endured the tides of hell itself. I watched ships full of my brothers crumble in ruin, populations of the mutated and the mad sucked in corpse falls from sundered hulls. I watched vessels that had anchored proudly in the skies above Terra, now dying in droves, as Sigismund's sons were reduced from an armada to a fleet, and from a fleet to scattered formations. I watched it all. It was art. I listened to my brothers shrieking and killing and dying. I listened to my cousins, those still loyal to the throne, roaring and bleeding out and spending their final breaths on foul oaths that cursed us and mocked us for our treachery. I listened to Altio's endless orders, not only to the crew, but to her syntagma war robots and cyborgs, directing them to stand with the Riven and the war gods more. I listened to the grind of straining metal and the thunder of guns that could and had killed cities. I listened to the sirens and the screams and the mechanical pulses of my armor's biosign systems. I listened to it all. It was music. I sensed the spillage of souls into the warp. I sensed the outburst of panicked, confused, blood-maddened, death-drunk spirits of the violently slain, tumbling into the realm behind reality. I sensed the wet laughter of gorging demons. I sensed the ebb and flow of the Empyrean's winds blowing harder behind the veil, fueled by the glut of freed souls. I sensed death after death after death. Those who did not know they were dead, those that fought uselessly as they fell into the waiting, gaping maws, those that cried wordless defiance as they were torn apart by demonic claws. I sensed the demons that would be born in the aftermath of this battle. I sensed how they loved us for this slaughter, and how they hated us for its mortal limits. For no matter the slaughter we perpetrated, it was never enough. Never enough. I sensed it all. It was beautiful. Hatefully beautiful. And last of all, I felt when Abaddon reached Sigismund. I felt the moment's curious formality, and felt the searing emotions in my lord's twinned hearts. I felt the vindication of glory to be earned. I felt the thwarted fury of a man forced towards a fate he did not yet adore. I closed my eyes, leaving the rolling, burning, fighting, vengeful spirit behind. When I opened them, Sigismund sat enthroned before me.
"So," he said, "you have returned.